Lots on Alexi Lafreniere today. Lots on the New York Rangers. And four games kick off the real version of the Stanley Cup playoffs. It gets underway at 3 o'clock on Sportsnet when the Blue Jackets face off against the Bolts of Tampa Bay. Good afternoon. Welcome to Hockey Central. Jeff Merrick alongside Justin Bourne. Going to be joined by Larry Brooks of the New York Post at the bottom of the hour. Sam Cosentino, our lead draft analyst here on Sportsnet. He'll be aboard in about 10 or 15 minutes' time. Meanwhile, I want to get to the games here in a couple of seconds, Bourne. And good afternoon, by the way. Hope you're doing well. Tampa faces off against Columbus. Later on at 5:30, we have Calgary and Dallas. Carolina Hurricanes, looks like Dougie Hamilton is back there. They'll face off against the Bruins at 8. And then your nightcap's a nice one as well. Vegas Golden Knights face off against the Chicago Blackhawks. That one at 10:30 on Sportsnet. We'll get to the games in a second. But NHL Draft Lottery Phase 2 yesterday. Follow the ping pong balls. All the teams that were bounced in the first round had their logo displayed prominently on a ping pong ball. Gary Bettman confirmed indeed that, yes, that was the Minnesota Wild. Yes, that was the Pittsburgh Penguins. Yes, that was the New York Rangers. Yes, that was the Toronto Maple Leafs, etc. And at the end of all of it, it is the New York Rangers who have vastly accelerated their redevelopment program. This the way that the Rangers have gone about this is pretty interesting. And they've gotten a lot of luck along the way. But as they rebuild this team, they just hit fast forward yesterday. Before we get to Alexi Lafreniere, Justin, I'm being long-winded here. Give us your thoughts on just the event yesterday, just on how that unraveled with the ping pong balls and with the commissioner, A, saying, yes, this is the Minnesota Wild, and then B, the Rangers, last team standing at the end of all of it.
Well, I tweeted out a little video of the guy. He dropped the Rangers ball in and before holding it up to show everyone, which, you know, gives light to like a million different conspiracy theories. The guy's face, the second he drops it in, is like, oh, come on. And then when it comes up as the ball, I can only imagine how he felt, like, oh, what has just happened?
Patrick so Ewing to the Knicks, frozen envelope? Yeah. Is that what you're suggesting?
Well, you know, what's funny is I saw someone say, like, all right, like, Bettman confirming the logos. Like, what's the point of that? Was there going to be some contention that people are like, that's not a Rangers logo or something like that? But what I would have liked to see is a weight and temperature of all the balls.
The balls have to weigh in, percentage body fat. The balls have to go through their own combine to make sure they're fit to be placed in the hopper. I would imagine that would have to be done. That was a matter of legality from Ernst & Young, I would think. Even if it wasn't.
Well, for sure. But they could have done that off camera. That was a weird ceremonial thing, wasn't it?
I don't know. I guess you would have to do that, confirm. Legally, you'd probably have to confirm them, whether it's on camera or off anyhow. I don't know. To me, it just sort of heightened the drama of the whole thing. It just made the whole thing seem that much more official.
True.
Like, I liked it.
Have you ever thought about how many lives changed in the moment that ball got sucked up? Like, all right, it changes where Alexi Lafreniere lives. It changes where his family visits. But it also changes someone else who was going to play for the Rangers doesn't play there anymore. And now all this success, how many more people are going to change their lives and go to more Rangers games or buy Rangers tickets? How many lives, the Toronto Maple Leafs ball was three quarters of the way up that chute before it jumped back out. You know, how different does the league look if that, you know, that it's microscopically different? It's crazy what changes in that moment.
You know, it's interesting. Philosophically, what it does show is that history can teach us nothing because context is always changing. And with so many variables at play at any given time, the idea that history can teach us something is ridiculous. I think Mark Twain said it best, history doesn't repeat itself, but sometimes it rhymes. I think that's the best you can get from history. Because to your point, there's so many different things that change for everybody all at that same moment. And you know what I think one of the big ones is as well? And if you look last year, we had Jack Hughes going to the Devils, Kaapo Kakko going to the Rangers, first and second overall. Year before that, second overall, we have Andrei Svechnikov. Before that, it's Nico Hischier and Nolan Patrick. Hischier goes to the Devils. Patrick goes to the Philadelphia Flyers. This year, Alexi Lafreniere, he'll go to the Rangers first overall. Don't look now, but the Metropolitan Division just got a huge injection of talent in the last three or four drafts. Like, I'm always sort of looking at, okay, where's power going? Where are stars going? Like, and it's always in this moment, it's always in flux. And right now, if I'm looking at all the different divisions around the NHL, and I'm saying, here we go again. It's another star player going to the Metropolitan Division. Sooner than later, Justin, that division's going to be stacked. And for the next, 10 years, it's going to be Lafreniere and Kako up against Jack Hughes and Nico Hischier. That's going to be the Devils and the Rangers. There's your marketing right there.
As an Islanders fan, that's tough to hear. That's tough to hear. Those two teams are going to be good. But I will say, all right, so that division gets loaded up. So some team loses more now, and some coach gets fired that wouldn't have got fired. It's the dominoes that fall with this are fascinating. But, you know, one thing that I think is an interesting topic there is how much, you know, how many people genuinely believe that the league rigs drafts. It's the stupidest thing in the world. Like, if you had asked them, who would the league even rig it for? You'd have had people said Edmonton, Pittsburgh, Toronto. And then, the Rangers win it, and people go, this league. You know, you're a fool if you don't think this league is done as rigged it. It's like, my God, man.
You know what?
You watch it play out.
Here's the thing about conspiracy theories. They're comforting. Everyone thinks that conspiracy theories lead to anxiety. I don't. I think that there is an natural attraction to conspiracy theories because we like to believe that someone's in charge and it's not just a collection of random
someone's
events.
Someone's in control.
Yeah, that something is in control. I think we have an uncomfortable idea with random events determining our lives, determining what happened. I mean, you just talked about how many lives were impacted by the Rangers winning. I think we're really uncomfortable with one event or one person, Lee Harvey Oswald, changing the world, right? I think it's a lot more comforting when we, I think that's why it's a lot more comforting to believe in conspiracy theories, because the base of conspiracy theories is the predicate that someone is in control of all of it. And at the end of all of it, we just want someone to be in control of the world and
that's
all of these events.
That's a really good point. I've never thought of conspiracy theories as a form of comfort that there's some order to all this, right? You're absolutely right. Otherwise, we're all just ping pong balls bouncing off towards this fate or the next, and it's totally random.
That's why philosophical hockey central today. that's why I love the visual of the ping pong balls, because that's all of it. It's all random. And it does underscore one thing that we hate to talk about as quote-unquote analysts for this goofy game, because we like to be able to explain everything. We like to say this happened because that happened, you know, this is because that was. We like to be able to explain everything, and there's a very logical reason why all these things happened in the way that they did, and we tend to forget and tend to ignore. I don't know if it's ignorance as much as it is ignorance, that at the end of all of it, luck plays a huge factor. Luck plays an enormous factor.
It does. I'm writing my pre-series predictions today for Sportsnet.ca, which will be up in the next hour or something, and it's like St. Louis and Vancouver and Dallas and Calgary. Dallas and Calgary in particular, going into that series, my prediction is whoever plays better will win, probably. You know, is there two very evenly matched teams that have a lot, they can both score, they can both defend, it depends. Who's going to get a bounce off the stanchion? Who's going to get a goaltender who has a bad sleep because his room is next to a guy who snores and, he's not on his game? At this point in the NHL, when you take teams that evenly matched, what decides it is a lot of fortuitous timing and luck and how people are rested and how the coaching is that day. And just at that point, making a prediction is here's kind of what I think happens in general. I had Dallas in six, but I don't know.
You know what? There's a lot of things that I love about my job. There's so many wonderful things. It totally outweighs the negatives, disproportionately. The one thing that I hate about my job, one thing specifically that I can't stand doing, it is the bane of my existence, and I'm going to try to never answer the email when it comes ever again. And you know what that is?
Predictions. Well, that's so what I just said about Dallas. People are going to be like, you doubted the Flames. It's like, well, I didn't doubt the Flames. I had to pick someone.
Yeah. my real answer to every question really is, I don't know. I don't know.
Like Vegas, Chicago, I will bet aggressively that that is a, you know, the Vegas wins that series. In fact, I put some real money down on Vegas winning that series by either a sweep or in five games. There are some times a team is just so much better. Like a team like Vegas right now is favored to win the Stanley Cup at the gambling websites. Chicago is the 23rd best team in the NHL. We never get series that lopsided. Dallas-Calgary, you know, flip a coin, man.
It's true. All right, let's get back on the Alexi Lafreniere page here. We'll go through some of the playoff opening round series here in a couple of moments. Sam Cosentino joins us from the CHL on Sportsnet, our lead draft analyst and our prospects expert. Read his picks, his prospects as always, and his top 10 list and his top 31 at sportsnet.ca. Sam, when you saw the Rangers emerge yesterday as winning the Alexi Lafreniere lottery, what went through your prospect mind?
Well, I was thinking it's probably a home run for both the player and the team. I mean, obviously the team, you get the first overall pick. And from a player perspective, if you're Alexi Lafreniere, with all the hype that you've received over the last 3 years, you're going into a market where you're going to be able to capitalize on that, you know, as well. So when it comes to the Rangers in particular, and they look at their young group with Hedel and Kravtsov and Buchnevich, and you know, you've got Panarin as a great mentor. You look at all the even strength points he had this year to lead the league in that department. So a really good example to set forth for Lafreniere. Not that he's going to need a ton of guidance, but he's going to fit perfectly into that mix there, right in the top two lines, maybe the top seven forwards. So a huge win for Jeff Gorton and the Rangers.
Sammy, what are the Rangers getting here? Give us the snapshot of the player. You've watched him probably even before he joined the QMJHL and lit it on fire in Rimouski.
Well, what's really interesting about this guy is that he's added layers to his game over the course of his 3 years. So he comes into the league, scores 42 goals. That is obviously very eye-popping, 80 points. Then he comes back the next year with 68 assists and 105 points. And, okay, I'm a playmaker now. He's got the adversity that he faced in the World Juniors being called out by Tim Hunter and on a team that didn't medal for the first time in home soil ever. And so that was some adversity that he had to go through. And he comes back. He has a great summer. Now he adds some consistency to his game. He adds, or at least there's more competitiveness as it seems, and the physicality of his game starts to come out. So now you've got a playmaker, you've got a goal scorer, you've got a guy who competes, who's also playing a physical brand of hockey, and you have the complete player. So I think there's a lot of people out there that haven't watched his play that are saying, oh yeah, is he Connor McDavid? Is he going to burn around the ice and be that dynamic guy? That's not what you're going to get, but you're going to get a really well-rounded player who makes those around him better and give you center-type qualities from the wing position. So I'm really excited for what he's going to have to offer the Rangers this year.
Justin.
So, Sam, Jeff and I were just talking about how much we loathe doing predictions for, you know, hockey events, because regardless of what happens, people come to you and say, well, look, you idiot, you got this wrong. And you say, well, okay, you know, moving on. So I thought I'd ask you for a prediction. What is a reasonable sort of output from a guy like Lafreniere in his rookie season? Is this a guy who could get 30 goals as a rookie, 60 points? What's sort of the floor and ceiling for his rookie season if he stays healthy?
I think he's a 20-goal guy between 50 and 60 points. And here's why, Borny. The way I look at it is he's going to have time to prepare like no other player has ever had. When you consider your first overall picks or even your top 10 picks, a lot of them are playing on good teams, which allows them to play deep in the spring. Then they finish their season. They go to the combine. Then they go to the draft. Then they're probably going to be toured around by Hockey Night in Canada, one of the conference finals or the cup final. And then they're going to a development camp, and then they're going to a main camp. So at the end of the day, they really only have a very limited time in which to train and prepare. Lafreniere hasn't played a game since March 8th. So he's been able to work on video with his coaches in Rimouski. He's been able to work on his game on and off ice. He's been able to kind of get bigger and stronger and heal anything that was ailing him, which we saw at the World Juniors. Having said that, if he does go back and plays Rimouski beginning in October, he'll have a nice month and a half to 2 months of games under his belt before the NHL season starts. The NHL players will have had a short time off, so Lafreniere will be able to hit the ground running and should be in top physical shape, and that's why I project him to have that 50 to 60 point range and probably be a 20-goal scorer because of the time he will have had to prepare and the fact that he'll hit the ground running and he will be right in game shape when all the others will be bemoaning the fact that they have to come back after such a short layoff.
Do you think he goes to Rimouski? I mean, the return to play plan for the Quebec League right now is on ice training camps on the 27th of August, regular season starting on October the 1st. Some say it's ambitious, but nonetheless, there it is. Do you think he goes to Rimouski camp, or does he just say, I'm sitting this one out, I'm going to the, it's going to be online, but you know, I'll be selected first overall by the Rangers on, what is it, October the 8th and 9th when they're doing the NHL draft, and then I'm going to build my career from there, but I'm done being a junior hockey player. You think he goes to Rimouski, or he takes option B?
Well, I think he's going to want to play. So if that's Rimouski, that's where I think the question mark is. I mean, he's proven all that he can prove in the CHL, and I'm not entirely certain of what the agreement has to offer, because if Rimouski's playing, I believe he has to stay there. Now, if they don't end up playing games because of a second waiver, things change, well, then you're looking at a situation where maybe Europe becomes a possibility. So when it comes to Lafreniere, though, I think he wants to play, and I think he needs to be playing. So that's going to be the important piece for him, because, like I said, he will have a unique opportunity here to do some things that other players haven't had the opportunity to do, and I'd be really, really excited about that if I were him, and I'd want to be playing games.
Sammy, in thinking about the situation Lafreniere will walk into in New York there, I can't help but think about Kako and his year, which I think, you know, it wasn't great. From the outsider's perspective, and I'm not a junior prospect guy, but it didn't seem like a great year. What can we expect from Kako there in New York? And, should he have been playing in the NHL this season? Because it didn't seem like he quite found his footing.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because, what do you want him to go back and play in the Liga, which is a really good league in Finland, but you don't really necessarily have the eyes on him? Or do you want him playing, learning from the really good pros that already exist there, being a part of the young core group in terms of chemistry and those sorts of things? So I think that kind of element that's not necessarily on ice is really important. And so in the long run, he'll likely benefit from it. In terms of the on-ice stuff, yeah, it's a struggle. It's tough. It's tough to make that jump. But what we've seen, Borny, especially in the Liga, if you go back, there's some history to extrapolate numbers there. Now, it's a pretty simple analytic type of thing to look at and say, well, Rantanen was really good in the Liga as a draft eligible, so was Patrick Laine, Kotkaniemi, so on and so forth, and think that Kako could come in and do some of the same things. Now, if he takes the path of a Rantanen, for example, that's a path that I'm okay with. Because in 2 to 3 years, if he's anything like Grant, then he's going to be a star in the league. So when it comes to Kako, though, I think it was pretty important just to get him over to be part of that young core. And that's important for the Rangers moving forward because, I don't know, just being around it, that part of it, if you take away the on-ice, I bet the Rangers and Kako would say there was great gains from that.
Why don't you get your thoughts on the rest of the draft here, outside of Alexis Lafreniere? And one thing specifically I'm curious about. We know this is a deep draft. I know there's about 15 guys, Sam, that you want to put in your top 10. And I know how challenging it is to put together a top 10, considering all the talent that's available. The Maple Leafs at this point don't have a first-round pick. That was surrendered to the Carolina Hurricanes. And they will select 13th overall. What? Do you have like a list of guys in and around 13 that you think, Leafs fans will look at one day and say, that could have been our guy?
Yeah, well, I mean, I hate to say it, and you know this, Jeff, but Yaroslav Askarov, the Russian goalie, is probably going to be somewhere in that neighborhood in the 13 yeah. to, the 18 range. And if you look at Carolina's goaltending situation, it always seems to be teetering. The way it is right now with Mrazek and Reimer, and not that Askarov is going to step right in and play, but you are projecting that player, if you're a first-round goaltender, to be in the neighborhood within 3 to 4 years. I often think it takes longer, and I would prefer a team that already has a really good goaltending situation that can look 4 and 5 years down the road to say, that's when we project them, like they did with Samsonov, in Washington, like they did with Vasilevsky in Tampa. But there's going to be a lot of really good players there. Caden Gooley is a defenseman from Prince Albert who's going to be in that neighborhood. Anton Lundell, the great two-way center from Finland. Dawson Mercer, who finished the year with Chicoutimi, who was a world junior gold medalist with Canada. All those guys are going to be in that range. And I think if you're looking to address something more immediate, you're going to have to go with one of the skaters as opposed to the goalie. But I do think the goalie does come into play in that neighborhood. So the Maple Leafs might be saying, all right, well, especially with all the talk about Frederik Andersen right now, that they're probably sitting there saying, oh, my gosh, we need a goalie, we need a goalie. And Askarov might very well be that guy.
Borny?
I have a very important question, and I'm curious on how to pronounce Stutzla, which you can, or Stutzla, yeah. Either way. Could you tell us about the rest of the top three in the draft, what to expect from the other two guys?
Yeah, so, if, you know, Quinton Byfield playing in Sudbury, really good year in terms of his point production, got banged up a little bit towards the end of it. Everyone knows that his World Junior experience wasn't perfect, but then again, he's 10 months younger than Lafreniere, and I expect him to play a lead role if they do play the World Juniors this year. So you're talking about a 6'4", 215-pound center that I still think is physically immature, and I think this guy can play probably at 6'5", you know, at 230. So he's an excellent skater. I'd like to see him use a longer stick because he's always hunched over with those great hands. You know, shoots the puck, is a responsible guy, could use some work in the face-off circle, but who can't? So he's obviously very coveted for that size down the middle of the ice. When you talked about Stutzla, he's a well-rounded player. So he was a key part for Mannheim on the power play this year. You know, obviously getting stuff done 5-on-5. When he went back to his peer group playing with Germany in international events, he was an absolute stud there. And I just talked to someone from there a couple of days ago, and they're saying he has come back and he looks like a different guy. And I think that's scary. But you talk about the polish to his game, the work ethic, the character there. And then you've got great skill, an excellent skater, a playmaker, a guy who can, play the half wall on the power play or even slide back and kind of dart and dive and move around. So I think he's the guy that ends up going number two. I think Byfield ends up going number three. But it's going to be a lot of fun after those two to see what happens. Cole Perfetti, Lucas Raymond, Alexander Holtz, Jake Sanderson. You're talking about Jamie Drysdale. I mean, it's going to be awesome to watch. I can't wait.
Jack Quinn, 50-goal scorer. There's some players. This is a deep one. Sam, always appreciate your expertise. Thanks so much for stopping by today.
All right, thanks, guy. And hey, Borny, what gambling website do you use? Just asking for a friend.
Pinnacle.com is my choice. Go for it.
That's awesome. Sammy putting down a couple of bucks. There's our guy. You can always check out Sammy's prospect list at sportsnet.ca. He is the finest in the biz. That guy pours over it and puts so much time into viewing all these guys. It's really quite remarkable. Okay, so today's schedule. Larry Brooks, bottom of the hour. We'll talk more about Alexis Lafreniere and spend a lot of time parking about the Rangers. Blue Jackets and Bolts, Flames and Stars, Hurricanes, Bruins, Blackhawks, and Golden Knights. Carolina and Boston is an interesting one. Carolina looked great against the Rangers. Carolina looked clinical. They looked disciplined. They looked well-balanced. And they add Dougie Hamilton to that mix now against the Boston Bruins team, Borny, that was, let's just say, were underwhelming in the round robin. How do you read this series? I'm not going to ask for a prediction. Just how do you read it?
Yeah. Here's how I read it. No one knows. There's no precedent for knowing that how, you know, what the play-in round, sorry, the round robin tournament means for what comes next. Like, the Boston Bruins look like, you know, not very good for three games of the round robin. Like, okay. So, you know, like, does that mean anything? Should we care? They had a weird sort of, phase two with Kasha and Pasternak, COVID complications. So it's been kind of weird to know what to expect from Boston. But let's not forget that the Bruins are the team that won the President's Trophy this year, and they didn't lose anyone. They're still that group. On the other hand, you have Carolina, a team who is very good, but everyone just saw them dismantle essentially a non-playoff team in the Rangers, and they think, you know, this is suddenly the dynastic Canadians of yore. I think the whole conversation on the Canadians Bruins has gotten kind of muddled. I just thought ESPN's picks, like 10 ESPN staff members, I think 8 of them picked Carolina to win this series. Now, I picked Carolina to win it in 7, but I don't think it's like that. I think the Bruins are still the Bruins. I can see, the arguments for Carolina being great and all that, but let's just not talk about this like Carolina is somehow the favorite in this series.
It will be an interesting one. And, you know, Rod Brind'Amour continues to impress with this coaching. And, you know, in that Rangers series, I know it's been a big year for Andrei Svechnikov of the Carolina Hurricanes because of the lacrosse goals. And they were spectacular and they were highlights. 2 years ago, when he's a rookie in the NHL, He scores 20 goals, all of them 5-on-5, Borny. Like, not one power play goal as a rookie. 25-on-5 goals. That's remarkable. And this guy is just getting better. Now, the Bruins have David Pastrnak, who's one of the elite goal scorers in the NHL. But in your estimation, how quickly do you think, based on what we've seen in the past season, this season, into the qualifying round, how close do you think we are to talking about Andrei Svechnikov as one of the best wingers in the game, period? That line that he's on with Aho and Taravainen, by the way, are hot.
Yeah, no, I think we're probably there. You know, one thing with Carolina is they've made some effort to do things differently. And, you know, we've talked about, Eric Tulski is a guy that has a lot of say there. He's got like an analytical bent with that team. And they have created a team sort of in that image, a young, fast, skilled team up front. But with that, they also seem to foster an environment that's supportive of young, different, new, creative thinking. You know, you look at the storm surge and you look at the videos of even someone like Dougie Hamilton, who's previously been criticized for being, you know, a museum going, you know, different type of guy. You know, Carolina seems like a welcoming environment for talented people who are maybe, you know, just looking for different ways to blossom. And I think that you see that play with Svechnikov.
All right, so that game tonight at 8 o'clock, you can watch it on CBC and Sportsnet. Flames and the Stars, why is this so hard for you, Borny? Why is this so difficult?
What separates them, really? Like, you know, you have a talented core with, you know, Seguin and Ben, who doesn't quite score like he used to, but Radulov, just like you have Gaudreau and Monahan on the one side. You know, you've got Giordano, who just won a Norris, and Heiskanen, who I think is going to win one. The only separation I can find
better
clearly is I think Dallas is better. And yeah, what do you see?
That's it. Bishop and Hudobin. Like, that battery over the past, what, 3 years has been the best 1-2 in the league? Like, just when you look at combos, because the Islanders boast one, the Bruins boast one. But if you look at the combo, if you look at the pair, is there a better 1-2 than Bishop Hudobin? I don't see it in the NHL.
No, you know, like, Bishop had a bit of a track record of injury. Maybe that can be a little concerning at times. But, man, when he's on, he's as good as anyone in the league.
The thing about the injuries, I always found that he would always get injured in the playoffs. But then I would look at and I'd see, like, he played a million games in the regular season. And he's a big man. Now, that one of the great things, and Jim Nill recognized this early. You know, when Jim Nill took over the Dallas Stars and he had, who were his goaltenders? He had Kari Lehtinen and Antti Niemi as his two goaltenders. And it was platooned. It was split. I remember asking him about it, and he said, we have the worst travel in the NHL. Like, there is no worse travel for any team in the league than us, the Dallas Stars. He said, I'm not going to complain about it, but I'm going to do something about it. And the thing we need to do is rest our goalies. I want to have two goaltenders that can play. We can't play one guy 70 games or we're going to get killed. And I would look at Ben Bishop, like when he would get injured in the playoffs, it's usually because he played too many games in the regular season. Yeah. And now that he's battery with Anton Hudobin, I don't have those same injury concerns with Bishop.
So my mind was wandering as you're saying that towards the idea of excess play, and, you know, travel for Dallas is something they had to prepare for, and that's just the reality of life. The reality of life for all teams right now is that play is condensed, so you are better off having a battery of goaltenders, given that just there's games on games on games. But also it leads me to believe that, like, teams that are defensive-minded and defensively structured may have some advantage in all this, because when you don't have your legs, it's impossible to create offense.
You know, and the one thing, and he's been knocked for it, and I know some of the players aren't exactly thrilled for it, but Rick Bowness, as a head coach, interim head coach of the Dallas Stars, I mean, he's always looked after blue lines. Like, that's been his thing. He helped to, you know, establish Victor Hedman as a legit, you know, elite-level NHLer in Tampa. Did a great job helping Braden Coburn turn around. He's helped a lot of defensemen. Like, he handles defense.
Hey, do you know how good Esa Lindell is? Esa Lindell's the most underrated D-man in the league, maybe.
And one of the reasons is Rick Bowness.
Yeah.
Right? But, I mean, now he's the head coach as well, and there is a defensive posture that Dallas has now that they have never had. I know it's not as fun. Like, the Lindy Ruff Dallas Stars at times, oh, rock and roll, right? Like, it was just fun to watch. There's this, like, Washington West. Like, let's just play here, boys. We're going to win 6-4 tonight. Tomorrow we're going to win 8-6. But that's gone now. This is the Rick Bowness Dallas Stars. And to your point, yeah, like, if if there's a defensive posture that you have, you may have an advantage in these series there where the games are going to be played really closely together. That's a great point, Justin. We're going to preview more of the series.
That's another one for Dallas's.
Yeah. Blue Jackets and Bullets, Blackhawks and Golden Knights. We'll get on that page here in a couple of moments. Briefly, we'll step away and come back, and we'll talk about the Rangers and their rebuild on fast forward now. After winning the lottery yesterday, they will select Alexi Lafreniere first overall. Larry Brooks from the New York Post joins us here in a couple of moments. Long time covering the New York Rangers. He will join us here on Hockey Central in moments. You're listening to Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. All right, welcome back to the program. Jeff Merrick alongside Justin Bourne. This is Hockey Central. Well, Justin, it seemed like about 2 seconds ago that the New York Rangers were writing letters to their season ticket holders explaining that this was a team that was going to take one step backwards in order to take two steps forward and redo the plan, rebuild the franchise. And whether it's selecting second overall last year with Kaapo Kakko, whether it's transitioning from Henrik Lundqvist to Igor Shesterkin, whether it's signing Artemi Panarin, whether it's the emergence of Mika Zibanejad, this thing is on fast forward right now, and that took another step yesterday as they win the NHL lottery phase two, and we'll select Alexi Lafreniere first overall. Larry Brooks knows this. He covers the New York Rangers and has for quite some time now from the New York Post. Larry, thanks so much for joining us. How are you today?
Oh, my pleasure. It's good. Nice day today.
Yeah, a little splash of rain here, but we're pretty good. I would imagine the sun is shining on the New York Rangers, and it seems as if, you know, despite, you know, the qualifying round matchup against the Carolina Hurricanes, where they were, you know, outclassed, but it's a rebuilding team. As far as this rebuild goes, I know luck is a big part of any kind of rebuild, but isn't everything kind of coming up Big Apple these days?
Everything seems to be falling into place. But I think it's important to be realistic about this, too. I mean, you know, the Rangers have gone about their business. They've been very methodical in collecting first-round draft picks, in giving the younger players a real shot to play in New York. But at the same time, their first-rounders haven't been boffo hits yet either. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're on the right track. They are following the program that probably the only one available to them. And they needed to restock because they had for years had gone for the not for the quick fix, but for the final piece of a Stanley Cup puzzle. And they just kept falling just a little bit short. And so they were back in and back in and back in. And at some point, the well had run dry. So they just needed to replenish an organization. They've done that. And I don't think there are going to be many deviations from this plan. You know, last year, Panarin became available. They had the cap space. They went out and signed him. But I don't think the Rangers believe that you can free agent yourself to a championship. I think they're on the path of building from within. And they're certainly farther ahead now from where they were projected to be a couple of years ago. But again, mm-hmm. It's a lot easier to move from 26 or 25 to 18, where they were this year, and then again to move from 18 to 12 or 11 than it is to move to the top. So they've got a lot of work ahead.
Yeah, having said it is, you mentioned Artemi Panarin. It's remarkable that here's someone, the Rangers have someone who's a Hart Trophy finalist. I have him as my number one on my ballot. Hart Trophy finalist and the first overall draft pick. This is new territory in the NHL, Larry.
New territory in a tournament playing team getting. I mean, I'll tell you what though. It. I remember like years and years and years ago when Scott Niedermeyer didn't want to play the first half of a following season. I think maybe they had won the cup the year before in Anaheim.
Yes, and Anaheim had to go get Matthew Schneider, right, because of it.
Right. And they were trying to work out how, you know, if he came back, when he came back, what, how it would apply against the cap and whatever they did. And people were talking about the precedent that was being set, And I said, yeah, well, the next time a multiple Stanley Cup champion and Memorial Cup champion and Olympic champion and world champion decides he wants to take a half year off after winning his fourth Stanley Cup. Yeah, that's right. So I don't think we have to worry about a precedent being set here by the Rangers. However, you're 100% correct in that it has been a long time since the Rangers had real star power. You know, and it's been probably a longer time since they had younger star power, a very long time. And it's good for the Rangers, and I think it does translate to being good for the National Hockey League. I do think it's good for the league when the Rangers are a good team.
Justin.
Well, that's exactly where I was actually hoping to take the conversation, Larry, is to kind of dial it back to the big picture. And I saw today that you had the back page of the New York Post today with your story. And I don't know how often the Rangers get the back page these days. And I'm wondering what the potential is, you know, when the Rangers are good, how different is it in terms of how relevant they are in the city, being that there's so many other sports teams and so much other action going on?
Yeah, the Rangers are a big-time team. You know, they go back to 1926, and there is something about the Rangers, the Giants, the Yankees, the Knicks. You know, it doesn't mean that they're better franchises than the Islanders or the Devils or the Jets or the Mets. It doesn't mean that at all, but it means that they are entrenched in New York sports culture. And In the last decade, when the Rangers were clearly one of the best three or four teams in the league from, say, 11-12 through 16-17, they were there all the time. The Rangers were a hot item in the spring, and we did get the back page. We, meaning me as our staff, not we as the Rangers, but, you know, we as the staff. And they, as the Rangers, got the back page a fair amount in April and May and into June in 2014. But, you know, a player like Lafreniere, who is going to be charismatic, brings a different kind of, I think, sparkle to the operation.
With Larry Brooks talking about the New York Rangers, yesterday the Rangers winning the NHL lottery. They will select first overall, where Alexis Lafreniere will be headed to the Big Apple for the first time, because we understand he's never been there before. You know, you mentioned that there have been some interesting picks made elsewhere with the Rangers, and I have no doubt that someone like Vitali Kratsov or Filip Hedl are going to be, you know, good players in the NHL. I think we all wonder about Elias Andersson and what the end game is there. The Edmonton Oilers are going through their own situation, not too dissimilar to Elias Andersson with Jesse Puljujärvi. What is the latest with Andersson, and how does this all end with him and the Rangers?
Well, my sense is that he won't play for the Rangers. He will play this season in Sweden. The Rangers have loaned him. It was, I guess you would say, a mutual decision. I mean, he was actually invited to the Rangers summer camp, the pre-tournament camp, but he declined. And, you know, he has told the Rangers many times he just feels more comfortable right now staying home. And there are issues away from the rink, I think, influenced that decision. But he has made it clear that for now he is more comfortable playing in Sweden than he would be playing in North America. I don't see how the relationship really is repaired to the degree that he's back in a New York uniform at any point. I mean, he did walk out on them in December. He demanded a trade and walked out on the Wolfpack and flew back to Sweden in December. There was some sort of reconciliation so that the Rangers loaned him to his team in Sweden to finish the season, and now we're here. I would think the most likely scenario is Andersson being included in a larger deal somewhere else. And I doubt it would be during the offseason because I think he just has essentially zero value right now. So if he has a good year in Sweden, perhaps his value goes up he becomes a I don't want to say a really chip to play because I don't think he's that, but you know, he becomes an interesting piece that the Rangers could put out there.
One thing that's intrigued me about this team is the right side of the defense, which I'm looking at specifically being Adam Fox, Jacob Trouba, and Anthony DeAngelo. Like, each one of those players has a really high ceiling. Like, their good is really good, and then their bads is sometimes dramatically bad as well. Tell us about the rookie season of Fox and the, you know, the first season for Trouba in a Rangers uniform. How it went on the right side of the Rangers D this year?
Well, I would say that Adam Fox actually avoided the real peaks and valleys, that he played at a high level essentially from the second week of the season on. He's a terrific.
I guess I'm talking more DeAngelo there when I'm thinking about floors.
I'm sorry?
I guess when I'm thinking of highs and lows, the lows of that thing.
Oh, no, I agree. I don't think he has a low floor. In fact,
right.
His play in the three games against Carolina was mundane, which is shocking because he had been so good all year. I think Jacob Trouba looked like a different person when he came back for summer camp, and he actually was one of the Rangers' few representative players against Carolina. And I think he looked like he was in terrific shape when he came back. Plus, Trouba talked a number of times during the year about the difficulty he was having adjusting to a new system, a new partner, a new city, a new team. He had played in Winnipeg his entire career. It's obviously an adjustment coming from Winnipeg to New York in and of itself. And he talked about it. He just admitted he just wasn't comfortable. So I would think he will be less erratic next season, and he does bring an ingredient that the other right-siders don't, and that's physicality, and he can be intimidating, and he can be mean to play against. Tony DeAngelo, outstanding offensive player, great speed, terrific in the offensive zone, knows how to go to the net, can pass the puck, but his defense is somewhat deficient at this point. So the Rangers do have a right side that generates offense, and they have another one coming who is going to play in Sweden next year in Nils Lundqvist, who was a first rounder, a late first rounder a couple of years ago. So it gives them four on the right side. The problem is that it's only four. So the Rangers are going to have to add some right side defensemen to the organization.
Larry, before you wrap up, I mean, I know the story yesterday and the story today is still Alexis Lafreniere and the first overall pick. But, you know, the big story in New York as it relates to the Rangers is still the Lundqvist question. One more year at 8.5. This is Igor Shesterkin's Nets. The Rangers are able to transition from a Hall of Fame goaltender transition smoothly to someone who will probably be the best goaltender in the NHL in a couple of seasons. But what happens to Lundqvist? Is it a buyout? Is it a trade? Does he stay with the Rangers? Of the three possibilities, which one do you think is accurate?
Well, I don't think it's C, staying with the Rangers. I haven't been able to conceive of that since February. I think if the Rangers had wanted Lundqvist to be their backup next year, he would have been their backup this year, and he wasn't. You know, he started one of their final 19 games, and he only started that one because Shesterkin was hurt, and it was a back-to-back situation, and Georgiev had played three in a row and needed a night off. And I cannot conceive of Lundqvist being the Rangers' backup next year. I don't think that's in the plans. I don't think it's what the organization wants, and I'd be surprised if it's what Lundqvist wants. Although I will say flat out that he has not talked to me about it. I don't think anyone, you know, perhaps his family does, but I don't think anyone knows what he's thinking at this point. I think the options on for the Rangers are A, that he will tell them that he is going to retire from the NHL and play in Sweden next year, or just retire. And if he doesn't, and certainly there's not going to be any pressure from the Rangers to try and tell him that he has to retire. I mean, but if he doesn't, I think the only option is a buyout. I can't imagine there's a team at 50% that has the cap space at $4.25 million. I don't think there's a Stanley Cup contender right now that would be looking at him as the answer. You know, there are going to be a lot of goalies out there on the market this offseason. Braden Holtby, Jacob Markstrom, Robin Lehner, Corey Crawford. And you know, whether Lundqvist would look to see if there were a backup job available for a cup contender, I don't know. Is that really what he wants to do? There is the added element of the virus. What are the conditions going to be in the United States next year? Would Lundqvist play in a different city and leave his family in Sweden? Is that really what he's going to want to do, you know, at the age of 38? I don't know. So what he is going to do, I really can't tell you. And but I just don't see the scenario under which he comes back to the Rangers.
Interesting story that continues. Larry, always a pleasure, always a delight. Thanks so much for sharing your expertise today. We appreciate it.
No, I appreciate it. It was a good conversation. Thanks for having me.
Larry Brooks from the New York Post. The Rangers winning the NHL draft lottery yesterday. They will select first overall Alexis Lafreniere. Welcome to the Big Apple. We'll step away and wrap up. Have a look at a couple of the other series, and one that's getting underway here in just under 2 hours' time, or just over 2 hours' time. There's the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Columbus Blue Jackets. You can watch that one at 3 o'clock Eastern on Sportsnet. Preview that in a couple of moments. Yours truly and Justin Bourne. This is Hockey Central. We're back on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. All right, welcome back to the program here. Just about 60 seconds here, Borny, to wrap up before we give way to Smith and Jones. Your thoughts on Blue Jackets and the Tampa Bay Lightning. Can Columbus do it again like they did in the opening round last season?
Well, probably not, but it does help that Tampa is missing Steven Stamkos and Victor Hedman. Not sure if you heard those names, but pretty good at hockey. Those are substantial blows, but Tampa is like Toronto, but better in pretty much every area. Goaltending, they score a little bit more, they defend a little better, and Toronto gave Columbus a good push. So I gotta believe Tampa finds a way through.
And I know you like the Golden Knights over the Chicago Blackhawks. Is it midnight for Chicago in this series?
It's like the next day already for Chicago. They've gotten more than they expected with playoffs this year. I think that's been a bonus for them.
You can watch the Blue Jackets and the Bolts. That gets underway at 3 o'clock Eastern on Sportsnet. You can watch the Blackhawks and the Golden Knights at 10:30 Eastern on Sportsnet. In between, at 5:30, we have the Flames and the Stars. At 8 o'clock, it is the Carolina Hurricanes and the Boston Bruins. Bruins looking underwhelming, to say the least, in round-robin play. Carolina, on the other hand, look clinical against the New York Rangers. They are hitting. And, oh, yeah, by the way, Dougie Hamilton's back. Hockey Central returns tomorrow at noon.